Welcome to the Ephesiology Podcast on a brand new 10-week series, Innovative Disruption, recalibrating our mission to the movement of God. We are joined, as always, by Michael, our resident ephesiologist, and I'm Andrew Johnson, a pastor at Neartown Church in Houston, Texas. Michael, what are we doing? A brand new 10-week series?
Yeah, well, you know what? I think this will be interesting for us to do, and for a number of reasons. One is that it's getting us back to really thinking about the application of first century Christianity for the 21st century. So I'm excited about how this series can hopefully help us to begin to think more about what that early church experience, where their focus was, how that impacted the things they did, and then ultimately how it shaped the ecclesia, the church of the first century. So I'm looking forward to doing this with you.
It's going to be fun. So you have titled this notion as innovative disruption. And yet you just said, hey, we're going to look back at the first century church and some of the things they were doing. So what does disruption have to do with the first century church? How are we actually, and God's mission, right? How are these ideas coming together in this series?
Well, you think about the first century church and the things that took place in that early missionary activity. It was culturally disruptive. I mean, we've talked frequently about the disruption that we see, for example, in Ephesus on Paul's third missionary journey, how it disrupted the religious life of the culture. It disrupted the economic life of the culture as, you know, the idol makers were no longer able to sell their idols. It disrupted even the political culture as well. And sometimes that disruption was positive and well received. You know, Luke tells us that all of the residents of Ephesus heard the word of the Lord. And so there's a positive nature to it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's a negative nature to disruption, as we see with the riot that nearly takes mm-hmm. place in Ephesus. So disruption can be positive, it can be negative, but even in its negativeness, if that's even a word.
Negativity actually
negativity,
is a word, but that's fine.
Yeah, it has movemental qualities to it. It's representing the activity of God in a community, and that's really what we're trying to recalibrate to, is to see what it is that God's doing in our context and engage with what he's doing.
So if our desire is to keep that central, to see what God is doing, to watch his movement, it seems that that is going to be naturally disruptive, because for so many of us, we have put different things as a higher priority. Or even, I don't even want to say different religious customs, but there are things that exist within each of our cultures that we have taken to be normative, that we say, this is what all Christianity should look like forever. And the more that we poke at it and the more that we draw into God's mission and his movement, we actually might find some of the things that we thought were those musts are in fact not musts, and our actions will look different based on our contexts. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole right now.
Well, that would be a fun one to go down.
Yeah.
You know, especially in light of some thinking about the early church and what we're seeing in the archaeological record. I was mentioning earlier, you know, I've been working on a paper on Laodicea. And one of the conclusions that I draw from the archaeological architectural record is that for us to assume that the oikos, as it's being interpreted today in the microchurch movement or the house church movement, that that was monolithic, is to misunderstand the record. Mm. And so you're right. I think this idea of innovative disruption hopefully is going to, in some way, help us to reimagine what Christianity looked like in the early church in those early centuries, and in some way help us to think creatively about what does that mean for us today. But there's a foundation to it, and that's the beginning part of what we're getting at, and that is really reorienting ourselves to who Jesus is. And of course, I mean, these are things that we've been talking about for quite some time.
Okay, so before we launch into what the topics are of each of the chapters, topics that we'll endeavor to cover through this series, I did want to drill in a little bit. You've already mentioned multiple times, you know, the church in Ephesus and what we see in the Ephesian church. This is the Ephesiology podcast. You have already written the book Ephesiology. So will we only be talking about Ephesus again, or will our scope extend beyond the Ephesian church?
Yeah, I think it's going to extend beyond the Ephesian church. I mean, the Ephesian church, of course, is, I think, the most impressive church of the first century, for many reasons. I mean, we have more information about that church than we do any other church, more letters written either from Ephesus or to Ephesus. We know more people associated with mm-hmm. that city than we do in any other city. But that's not to mean that the other cities and things that were going on were not important. And so, for example,
right.
I mean, you think about Epaphras, who was a co-laborer with Paul, most likely that worked in Ephesus with him, but Paul sends him off to Colossae.
Yeah, he doesn't stay there in Ephesus.
No, he doesn't. He moves about, and so here we have one of Paul's co-workers going and establishing the movement in Colossae, and then from there, in the letter of Colossians, we see him connected with Laodicea and Hierapolis as well. And we don't talk very much about those two cities. And in fact, if we talk at all about Laodicea, it's usually in reference to Revelation chapter 3. And this was the church that Jesus was going to spew out of his mouth. And yet, what were beginning to understand, and I mean, we're not the first, of course, many people
right.
have understood this before us, is that the Christianity in Hierapolis as well as in Laodicea became significant in those areas, and it was so transformative in those communities, and we really see this bearing out in some of the material culture of those areas.
Wow. This really seems like it can be exciting. It seems like we've got a lot of ground to cover. So, Michael, what are some of the things that you already mentioned reorienting to Jesus? Obviously, in the coming weeks, we are going to stretch these things out. They will become full. We will really look at what does it mean to lean in on some of these areas. But if the first area is reorienting to Jesus, where else are we heading?
Well, as you mentioned, that's foundational. And of course, we, along with many others, have been talking about how important it is for us to get our Christology correct, because it's from a proper Christology then that we can get into thinking about what does that mean missiologically and what does it mean ecclesiologically. And so from our beginning point of Christ, it will inform the way in which we do our mission, and it should inform what the church actually looks like. And so we'll move from there and really unpack Christology take into consideration what was it that the early church believed about Jesus? How did they express that? And here, I think, is where we just have this beautiful description of Jesus and his preeminence mm-hmm. in Paul's letter to the church in Colossae. And we're going to be excited to dig into that a little bit and what all of that means. But it's from there then that we can get into our mission. What is our mission? And even to phrase it in that way, being our mission is a little anthropocentric, isn't it?
I would say a little bit of a joke. Oh, how cute. Your mission. Did you come up with it?
Yeah. And so it's coming to the realization that the church doesn't have a mission, but God has a church to carry out his mission. And so we'll talk about that as well. And that's going to lead us into developing a better understanding of the ecclesia of the first century. What is the intention of that? Why is that word important? What's the impact that it had on the lives of believers there and the implications for that? And then ultimately, we're trying to get to what many of us are talking about in regards to an adaptive ecclesiology. What are some first century, second century examples of how the church adapted? And this is where it gets super exciting, at least from my perspective, because we see multiple examples of places where the early church adapted to its context in sometimes they're very surprising ways in which it adapted. And all of that, I think, brings us to the point to realize that, wow, you know, we are privileged to take part of this in this mission, that it's really the incarnation of Christ that provides us a model of what the church looks like in a community, mm-hmm. And the realization that God is ever present, that he's already in those places working, and those are observable to us if we have the eyes to see how God is at work. And then
it's almost in a way, sorry, I'm getting excited. It's that realization that God is present and working is simultaneously comforting. It's encouraging and it's propulsive. that he is present and moving is a call to act with him, to join in with, as you said, engaging the movement of God. His presence isn't just, as you said, it's observable. The result of that observation isn't simply to say, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How neat. But it's also, like I said, propulsive. It should move us to get involved.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would add one more word to that nice list that you made, and that's liberating. It's mm-hmm. liberating for us to realize that, wow, I don't have to figure this out. This is God's mission. He's got it figured out. And now what we're blessed and really privileged to be a part of is what he's already doing. And you know, to have that in our minds really is liberating in special ways. Especially for those of us who, you know, have a sense of a missionary calling, if you will.
Right.
Whether that's locally or globally, mm-hmm. It's just very liberating to know that, you know, God has gone before us. He is already present. And it makes it much more fun to look at what it is that he's doing and join with that.
This is great. Well, we don't want to give away everything or, you know, put all the nuggets down so that people are feeling that they've kind of got their fill and they don't want to check in with the rest of the series. I think this is really going to be an encouraging time as we gather to recalibrate ourselves, our mission to the movement of God. I think this is innovative disruption is going to be a wonderful series. There is also something that we are going to try new with this series, which I don't think we have at least put the focus on before. And that is making sure that we're inviting feedback from people on our website so that people are actually dialoguing with us throughout this series so that there is, so that we're doing theology in community. Michael, how will people find that information?
Well, of course, we'll put it in the show notes that go out, you know, on the various podcast platforms. So you can click on that link, the site will be on our masterclasses site. So masterclasses.ephesiology.com, and look for innovative disruption. And I'm excited about that. I really hope that people will take advantage of this time. You know, I don't think that we're coming with solutions necessarily. Mm-hmm. We're coming with a lot of questions, and we're looking at examples of the way in which the early church innovated, the way in which it disrupted society, and really reflecting on what does that mean for us today. And so we need people to join in the conversation. We'd love to hear about ways in which God is disrupting your culture and ways in which you're joining with God and his innovatively creative ways of engaging with people. And so I'm really hoping that this will be a community effort.
Wow. Well, I think we have quite the opportunity in front of us. So, listeners, thank you so much for spending your time with us as we are starting out this 10-week series, Innovative Disruption, Recalibrating Our Mission to the Movement of God. If this is your first podcast with us, or you're interested in finding out more from our Ephesiology catalog, please visit us online at ephesiology.com. or in whatever podcast platform you are using. Scroll back, find a topic that you like, and listen more. And like Michael said, we want to hear from you. Please visit our Innovative Disruption page on masterclasses.ephesiology.com and dialogue with us on today's topic or any from this series. Let's make sure that we are doing theology and community together. So from Michael and myself, thank you for joining us on the Ephesiology Podcast.